Welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast with your hosts, Tony Castelnova from DisneyByTheNumbers.com and Parkhopper John from WDWParkhoppers.com. Keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times and get ready for the Disney Parks Podcast.
Ho, 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 everybody, and welcome to the Disney Parks Podcast. My name is Parkhopper John. Joining me across the internets is the lovable, huggable, and the affable Mr. Tony Castelnova from Disney by the Numbers. How are you doing tonight, pal?
I am Santa Claus. I am here from the future.
Yes, and what great things you have to bring from the future.
I just came back from Disney World. I've been on vacation.
So we are just a couple of weeks out from Christmas, and we wanted to do a couple of Christmas themed shows, and this is going to be a great show for you. We have got the author of the Disney by the Numbers book, Mr. Tony Castelnova, as our guest tonight, and we're going to do a little Christmas by the Numbers. So it's going to be a little bit of play. We'll get to it in just a couple of minutes. We got some housekeeping we want to take care of, but I thought that it would be great to interview Tony because he's kind of been making the rounds on the podcasts, on the internets. And, you know, I thought that, you know, we could ask some questions here. Disney Parks podcasters want to know. And so we're going to be talking to Tony about the book, and we're going to be talking about Christmas by the Numbers, all the facts and figures around Walt Disney World. It's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get into that, we'd like to tell you about a couple of things. The first thing that we would like to ask you to do is come to our website. If you haven't subscribed to our website, please do. It's DisneyParksPodcast.com. And there's a lot of really great information. We have an awesome blog. If you want to watch the blab recordings that we normally do on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m., you can come to the blog and you can watch them live there. We have a lot of great information. We have links to some incredible products and services from all around the internet, people that we really love and love to be partnered with. And the one thing that we would like to ask is if you please sign up for our newsletter. We send a newsletter out every week with great content, a lot of content that you don't find on the blog, and you know, letting you know about meetups, letting you know about the blabs, letting you know about anything that we have that we can share with you about what's going on at Disney. It's a great newsletter. It's the logo and all the things that our friend did for us. It just looks great. And we want to make sure that you don't miss out on any of the Disney magic. So please sign up for the Disney Parks Podcast newsletter. Also, one other thing that we would ask is you would please review us, give us a rating on iTunes. That helps us. That keeps the feed up in the iTunes store. If we can get on the front page of iTunes, I think that would be an amazing thing. And every review that you give us helps us out. Please let us know how we're doing. If there's something we could do better, let us know. Sure. If there's something you'd like to see, let us know. And please give us 5 stars, and we would appreciate that. And what else, Tony, do we need to let them know?
Well, if you like the show, share it with a friend, too, because that also helps iTunes and all the other places we are. We're on Stitcher and Player FM and all those kind of things. So Downcast and, you know, whatever podcatcher you're using, you know, share us with a friend, and that also helps. Right. In iTunes indirectly. And if you like what we're doing, you can then go to patreon.com/Disney Parks Podcast. And if you'd like, you can help us out. You can donate as little as a dollar and as much as you feel. You know, this show is bringing you value if you like what we're talking about and the guests that we bring on and things like that. We have some nice, great gifts that, you know, we're offering to you based on you know, how much you want to donate. So you can do that once again at patreon.com/Disney Parks Podcast. We have a link to that in the show notes. We have a link to that on the website, and any of that is good. And if you just want to drop us a note, you know, you can do that too. Go to Disney Parks Podcast, and under each show note, there's a little place that you can make a recording and send it to us, and we can use that on air. So, you know, don't feel that this is a one-way conversation. This is, you know, all of us getting together. So,
yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, several years ago, I was at a meetup for another podcaster, and I had been very new to the Disney community, and I was following a bunch of people on Twitter, and this is before Facebook kind of exploded onto the scene, so Twitter was the big deal, and I had met a guy who had a website who collected all of the facts and figures from Disney parks, and I was in one of the little areas. It was the dining area right off from Yak and Yeti Express. And I was standing there, and I turned around, and I saw this guy. He had a Disney by the numbers shirt or DBT and hat on or some such nonsense.
Yeah.
And I looked over, and I said, I don't mean to interrupt you, but are you Tony from Disney by the numbers? And he looked up, and he said, what do I owe you, money? And no, he said, yes. And I said, hi, my name's John. And I just started really following you on Twitter. And that started a friendship. That has grown into one of my most prized friendships. And then I really got into his site because he has amazing information about all the facts and figures about the different aspects of the parks, the resorts, Walt Disney World, Disneyland, all around the Disney community. And I was so happy and proud that he this year released the Disney by the Numbers book. So he is a published author. He is my good friend, Mr. Tony Castanova, and I just thought that everybody should hear a little bit of your story, a little bit about Disney by the Numbers, before they go out and purchase copies of your book, because they make the best Christmas gifts.
Yeah, good stocking stuffer.
Yeah, hands down, they make the best gifts. So tell everyone a little. Yeah, it does fit in a stocking, a big stocking. Or one that stretches, or nylons.
Yeah, so you want to hear, let's see, let's go back to, God, it must have been probably, well, the site's about 7 years old now. Mm-hmm. So it started, let's go back a little bit further than that. Let's go back to, you know, like I always say, my first trip to Disney World was 1976. So I kind of got bit by the bug of that trip. You know, I was like, wow, this place is, you know, awesome. And my father kind of had the same mentality as I did. Is, you know, how did they do all this? How did they move all these people around? And where did the garbage go? And how did they feed everybody? And, you know, kind of the logistics of, you know, how they did this day in and day out without flaw. You know, it was a flawless show every single day. So that kind of started my, you know, really, holy mackerel, I got to, you know, get into this. So we went every year. You know, family trip. And then 1 year, my father said, hey, I'm going to live in Orlando. He was working for Darden Restaurants. Darden was opening up a new chain. And I said, he says, if anybody wants to move down, fine. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Like, where in Orlando? Are we going to be like close to Walt Disney? Yeah, probably. Darden's in Orlando. So, yeah, we could, yeah. Sign me up. So I was working for a video store, and I asked for a transfer. When I got down, I kind of quit that and started working for Disney. And one of the things that they would give cast members is this book, and it's called That's a Fact. This is the original one I got. This was the fall of 1995, 1996, fall, winter. And it's got the Animal Kingdom on it. Which is interesting because it didn't exist yet. it was being built. And this little book, you know, had like, you know, all these different facts and figures. It's not going to probably show up on the video. All these facts and figures and phone numbers and things like that. So I was like, you know, I used to keep each one of these. I'm like, these are great. I love this. You know, all these great facts. And they were really for you to, you know, help guests. You know, with, you know, phone numbers, had phone numbers in it, you know, the Disney Village hotels.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, now Disney Springs. Right.
Yeah. On Hotel Boulevard. And it was really just, you know, talking points. So I had taken these back And I started, you know, I think I started an Excel workbook, started keeping these facts because each book had new facts in it. So I'm like, oh, great. Just keep writing them, keep accumulating them. Then the History Channel came out with that great series, you know, Behind the Magic Kingdom, Behind Epcot, Behind, you know. And if you go back and listen to those, they are filled with facts. I mean, chock filled with facts. So I was recording them probably on VHS at the time, then sitting with a little coffee table thing and then, you know, listening, replaying them. And then writing down all these facts and just started accumulating them. A couple of years go by, you know, I got tons of them. I said, hey, you know, this might be an interesting book. I started trying to put it into a Word doc, you know, kind of like by chapters, you know, Walt Disney World, Magic Kingdom, kind of doing that. And it was very hard to manage this thing. I didn't know what was duplicates and things like that. So a couple of years go by. There was a channel on cable called Tech TV, and this guy, Leo Laporte, awesome podcaster, got some of the best podcasts out there on tech. He had one show where he was talking about how to build a website using this Mac-only software called RapidWeaver. And I'm like, wait a minute. He goes, he types, and hits a publish button, and boom, it made a website. Wait a minute, I know nothing about building a website. If he can do it, I can do it. I go out, I get a Mac, I go out, I get the software, RapidWeaver, and now I'm starting to build a website. So that went along, and another show he has on, this other piece of software, it's called Scrivener, and it's for if you want to write a book. It can keep track of the characters and it can, you know, do timelines and has all these fancy writing tools to really help you write a book. If you were writing a book about characters, this software is awesome. But I just needed it to kind of organize all of the different things, hotels and resorts and, you know, water parks and monorails and transportation. So I wanted to have categories and then subcategories so I can keep track of everything in a more logical format. So then I find out, well, what about if I got a book? So now I got a website. People are coming to the website. I'm getting emails from like high school kids and college kids saying, hey, I used your site for my research paper. It was great. I didn't have to go to 100 sites. Your site had all the facts of all the, you know, the statistics of Disney. You know, everybody wants to know numbers of how many people visit the park each year. And Disney does not publish those numbers. If they do, it's in some secret vault. I have no idea where those are. Anyway, so a site and now a book. So I got a book on how to write a book proposal. And this book kind of showed you or outlined to you, you know, the steps to go through and what should be in your book proposal and how to format it and put it together. And I was like, all right, so buy the book, read the book. So now I'm reading a book on how to write a book proposal. So I go on the internet and I must have sent out, I don't know, maybe 100 book proposals to everybody from Random House to I don't know who. Every place that had the possibility of publishing a book. And some answered, some didn't. A lot of rejection of, hey, sorry, you know, we're looking for books with stories. Your book has not a character, not a story, not anything that a normal, you know, book. And then I found Theme Park Press, this guy, Bob, who runs Theme Park Press. I think I found him through doing this podcast. We were we had on some people like Jim Corcus, who has his books published through Theme Park Press. And I really, you know, I have to thank Bob, but really you should go to Theme Park Press and check out all of the books. We do have a lot of guests on that Bob publishes. Not that, you know, because I published through him, but he has some great people writing stuff for him. Sam Genoway has written for him. Jeff Bam has written for him. So I sent him my book, and I said, listen, I said, this is a book. It's about a theme park. I know you do a lot of Disney stuff, and there's no story, no character, no nothing. But he took a look at it. He said, yeah, I think people would be interested in that. And it took from the time I sent Bob that initial thing, I think I have here somewhere, the original, my original author agreement with Bob. This was dated November 5th, 2013. So it took about 2 years of us putting this thing together. And out came a book. So 2 years later, out came a book. So there you go. That's the short, the shortest version of, you know, what's happened.
Yeah. And it's been, because of my proximity to you, it's been very interesting to see the process of the, you know, you're constantly having to update, and it's a constant process. And so,
yeah.
You know, how often do you actually go through the site and, you know, I'm sure updating the book, how often do you go have to do that?
Yeah, so there's actually more stuff on this. Well, there used to be more stuff. I took all the Disney stuff off temporarily because I want to try and sell a book. You don't need the book if you go to my website. So unfortunately, a lot of those Disney World things are not there anymore. But it is a pretty often thing. So whenever I get a new fact, I go back to my Scrivener software. I'll search for that fact because it's got a great little search engine in it. I could type in, you know, just a part of a sentence, and it'll pull up all of the places, and it'll show me all the different chapters it's located in. Mm-hmm. So then I can make sure that I'm not duplicating it or I don't have that. It is pretty often, you know, Disney, you know, things like the holiday stuff always changes, the, you know, the lights, the garland, all that kind of stuff, that'll kind of change. So, you know, right. How much gingerbread stuff they used in the different gingerbread right. displays, that has to get updated. But a lot of things stay the same. When new attractions come out, sometimes it takes them, you know, so where, you know, a lot of the people ask me, you know, where do I get all my information from? You know, I usually don't try and get it from the internet. That's not a real, unfortunately, you can't believe everything you read on the internet.
What?
It's not all true. I hate to say it.
Oh, my gosh. So 9/11 wasn't an inside job?
No, it wasn't. It didn't happen.
Unbelievable.
I try to get stuff from Disney things. I have a lot of Disney books. You've seen my collection of Disney books.
Yes.
I try to get things from Disney books. If I do find a fact that's from the internet, I'm using my air quotes, I'll try to verify that in, you know, different ways, whether it's with cast members or another source, or I don't, you know, I just don't want to put it out there, you know, because people, I think now at this point are, you know, saying, you know, this guy, you know, is kind of the, you know, pretty reliable, and I don't want to, you know, tarnish right. that image of, you know, just right. putting out willy-nilly stuff. You know, back in the day, I wasn't as careful. I would just publish stuff. If I found it, it's a gem. And just toss it out there. And people, it's great when people would say, hey, you know, it's really this or it's really that. And then I'd ask them, you know, how do you know? Well, I'm a cast member and I work on that attraction. Oh, all right. Well,
you would
probably
know.
probably have pretty good information then.
Right.
Sometimes, unfortunately, not all cast members have the correct information.
What? Yeah, I've met cast members who, like, I know certain facts.
Yes.
I know them. I know them like I know my wife's birthday and anniversary. And
example of the fireworks cruise.
You know, yeah, exactly. Oh, that's a great story. You want to tell that story? You want me to?
No, you can tell.
So we had a friend of ours who is from, I kid you not, Boring, Oregon. Name of the town. Kathy, love you. Wendy Lynn, love you. You're awesome. And they invited Sid, myself, and I actually got to bring Tony on this cruise. And so what it is one of those fireworks cruises. If you're ever at the Magic Kingdom and you see a bunch of pontoon boats in the middle of the lake sitting there, they're watching the fireworks show. And it was really cool. They took us out from the Contemporary. They drove us out to one of the islands. He was talking about, you know, Discovery Island, right? Discovery Island.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, drove us around that. And then he talked a little bit about the Wilderness Lodge and Fort Wilderness. And And then, you know, when it was time, we drove over and we saw the fireworks. And what was funny is he started telling facts and figures. And like five or six of us on the boat were like, no, this is what really happened. And at one point, he literally stops the boat and just stands there and says, wow, you guys like really know your Disney facts. I'm like, Disney blogger, Disney blogger, Disney blogger, cast member, cast member, cast member. And he was a cast member, too. It just, yeah. You know, he was working on an old script, literally.
Yeah.
It was so funny.
And I don't blame him because things change on a constant basis. And if you don't, you know, if he doesn't go back and, you know, to management or whoever and say, hey, listen, you know, can you tell me are these still things are true? You know, there almost needs to be, you know, there is the Disney archives. And I don't know how accessible somebody like him, you know, doing that could get. That, but there almost should be like a Disney World archivist,
right?
Located here in Orlando, and you know, I have a feeling, and I may be wrong, but I think Scott Otis has something to do with that.
That would not shock me. We just added him, but yeah, that would
because
shock
he's
me
got a lot of. I know he collects Disney books,
right?
And I think that's part of his job is to archive Disney books. So, Scott, if you need one of these, call me.
That wouldn't shock me at all. Yeah. And the other thing that Disney is actually doing is I've noticed more of a trend where on the Disney Parks blog, they do post, you know, Mickey's Very Merry Christmas by the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, they've been doing.
I wonder where they got all that from.
Yeah. I wonder where, but they've been sending stuff out and I remember getting things. Mm-hmm. Saying, hey, you should, you know, here's some information from Disney.
Yeah.
So that's been pretty cool. So how's it been? The book came out, 2 months ago when the book?
September? The end of September, yeah.
How has it been received? It came out in September. How's that been for you?
You know, I don't, being a numbers person, I still don't have any numbers. I haven't really caught up with Bob and, you know, find out, you know, what things are. I know I've sold 50 books myself.
Wow.
You know, I did give some away to some family and friends.
Right.
And you can go to DisneyByTheNumbers.com. There is a link for the book. And also, if you get the book from me, it gets a number. And there's a DBTN book tracker. And you can see your number and your name on the site, which I thought would be a kind of fun little thing. It being it's, you know, everything on the site starts with a number. It's not a fact. It all starts with a number, which is the other little niche thing I did with the website. So, you know, you can see, and those are the ones that, you know, I've doled out.
Right.
So I'll have to catch up with Bob and see, you know, see what the Amazon numbers are.
Yeah, so. I owe you an Amazon review because you did give me a book and I should review it on Amazon for you. Yeah. But you've got 5 stars on Amazon. So good. People are reading it and digging it. And here's the way I liken it. And please, for those of you out there, you'll know what I'm talking about. And I just want to prep Tony that you don't think that I'm insulting. This is not a book that you're going to sit and read cover to cover. You absolutely can.
Yeah.
But because it's a facts and figures book, it's one of those great books,
like
coffee table books or
bathroom book.
I wasn't going to say that, but you said it. It's a great bathroom book because you're in there for a few minutes and you're flipping through and you're learning. But my favorite suggestion, I've actually said this to people, is to get the book and keep it in your backpack when you go into the parks.
Yeah.
And then when you're in the parks and you're standing in those long lines, you can use it to play, you know, little mock trivia games. Yeah. You know, guess how many blah, blah, blahs are in the blah, blah, blah. You know,
it would be a great book to be sold at Disney World in the stores, in the parks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It'd be a great book to sell there because it would be a perfect thing to kill time and have, you know, you can play trivia games with people,
mm-hmm.
you know, like guess how many elevator, you know, shafts there are in the Twilight Zone.
Right.
You know? So yeah, it would be a great little thing, but, you know, and if you don't want to carry the physical book, but I do recommend that you do, you can get the Kindle version.
Right.
and put it on your mobile device and carry the Kindle version. You know, the book is $14.95 on Amazon. The Kindle version is $1.99, so you can pick, you know, how much you want to donate.
Right.
If you get it from me, it's a little bit more because I have to package it and ship it.
Yeah, and you also do something else very special to the books. Tell me a little bit about that. You do the tracking number.
Yeah. So each book is signed, and then it's given a number, and then you can go to let me pull it up. I'll tell you the exact the exact thing that you can go to. You go to DBTN Book, and then under there it says DBTN Book Tracker. And you can see your name. I'm only using first name, so I'm not using last names or anything like that. And right now we have how many books out there? We got 33 books out right. there.
Right.
Mom is number one.
Smart man.
And then I went in, my brother is number two, my sister's number three, my other brother's number four. My two daughters, you have book number seven. So right after family, John, boom.
Love you, brother.
So, yeah, so you can go check out, you know, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know,
and of course, you know, you're the numbers guy, so you have to track who gets what book. So that's what right. makes sense.
All right.
So,
I would love to have done that through all the Amazon, books too, but, apparently, you know, it's a whole crazy process to do customization through Amazon. You know, like they would have to send me all the books. I would have to sign them all and then number them and then send them all back. And then they would have – and, you know, they want to send, like, you know, hundreds. I'm like
– Yeah, no.
You know.
Yeah, I blame
you. The book will never be out there.
Right.
You know, if I got to sit and sign hundreds of books. So, I don't know.
Well, my friend, it's a great book. I've said it before. I'll say it again. I'm so, and I mean this heart to heart, you know, been my friend for a long time. I'm so proud of you, that you got this Thank done. You. It's a great book. Totally worth it. It's a lot of fun just to know the facts and figures. This is a great, Christmas gift, a holiday gift, whatever, you need for your gift giving this season. It is a great gift. Again, you can get it at DisneyByTheNumbersBook.com, right?
DisneyByTheNumbers.com.
Right. Sorry. DisneyByTheNumbers.com.
Yep.
You can get it on Amazon, and you can also get it through Amazon for the Kindle. I highly encourage you to get it off of Disney by the Numbers so Tony can autograph it for you. It's always special. I'm a book dude. I love to get books. It's always special when you can get a signed one. And get your copy today. And thanks for telling us a little bit about your story. I mean, we talk every week. You know, this is our thing. But I just thought that it would be good to get a little bit of an interview in because, you know, you could always, you know, brush your chops up on getting interviewed. And so with that, what we want to do is for the bulk of the show, what we want to do is since it's Christmas, we want to go through some of the holiday Christmas by the numbers, and we're going to go through a couple of the parks and maybe some of the resorts and just talk about some of the numbers, some of the incredible numbers that Disney has around the holiday season. And it's just amazing. So where are we going to start?
Let's start with the general Walt Disney World, because that's a pretty big thing.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd encourage people that, you know, they do the, I think it's the Yuletide tour.
Mm-hmm.
Or the, yeah. If you get a chance, go back to the building, take the tour, take the holiday tour, right, where they take you back to the Holiday Services building, and it will blow your mind.
Yep.
You know, you think you have a problem putting away your Christmas decorations? Does not compare.
You don't have a warehouse. Is
a 56,000 square foot warehouse.
Right.
There is a ribbon and glitter room. Go ahead, say it.
Makes me happy, sparkly.
Yeah, yeah. So I was fascinated. You know, in January, they start planning all of the decorations for the next year. In January, they'll start, you know, compiling, you know, what's going to be new, what they need new stuff for, go through everything, check for all the damaged stuff.
Right.
And then they reorder, you know, certain things, obviously. You know, I think the lights on the castle, they just cut and throw away. So they'll get all new lights for things like that. The other interesting thing is, like, all the balls on the ornament, the Christmas trees, they come in, they take the tops off, then they put a wire, glue it to the bottom, put the top on, glue that back on, so that when kids are pulling them, they can't pull that thing off the tree. Mm-hmm. They can pull the whole tree down,
right?
But they cannot pull that ball apart. or the whatever, you know, thing it is. So
right.
It's very interesting, you know, when they tell you, you know, how they do all these things.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is a very interesting. If you ever get a chance to see them putting a tree up, whether it's in a park or the resort, I highly recommend that. It's very interesting. I think they just had one recently for the Grand Floridian. Yeah. They actually have a hoist on the ceiling that pulls the tree up, and they do it from the top. They don't go bottom up, they go top down.
Right.
That's how they build their tree. So
yeah, I've got friends to schedule their winter break vacation during the shift, so they can actually stay in their resort and watch. Yeah. Or go to a resort, like if they're staying at the Grand Flow or you know, somewhere on the Monorail Loop, they'll go to wherever they're putting up the tree. So like the big giant Mickey on the
Contemporary.
Yeah. When we were there, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, it wasn't up.
Right.
But you can see the scaffolding where they're putting it up. So,
You know, last year they didn't put it up. And I don't know, you know, what happened with that. It'd be interesting.
They were doing, they're still doing construction out there because of they were still finishing up some of the last touches from the California Grill.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's talk about some Disney World things. Let's start with about 11 miles of garland. Not feet, not yards, miles of garland. They typically have about 3,000 wreaths that they put up. Not one on their front door. 3,000 wreaths. They have about 1,500 Christmas trees. So that's all the little ones, the big ones, all the different kinds of sizes.
Now, this is all around the parks and resorts, right?
Correct.
This is total. Right.
This is Walt Disney World, the larger entity. The tallest tree is a 70-foot tree in the Disney's in front of the Disney's Contemporary. It's also the only resort that has their tree outside and not inside, which I find disappointing.
Yes. Well, they have – that's not true. I was going to say when you're in the lobby area, they don't have very high ceilings.
They got a little
– Yeah, they got little ones.
On the Grand Concourse,
they do, but they've got the gingerbread thing and the frozen monstrosity to deal with, and then they've got the giant Mickey ears on the outside most of the time. So I think they would probably – You know, they'd be struggling with, we're going to put a Christmas tree in here, too. Where are we going to put it?
Right. And that was always the Polynesian, you know, had a little short one upstairs and a little short one downstairs. And now that they don't have that, they put up a bigger tree. Right. So
I've not been there this year. Very excited to see what they do for holidays.
Yeah. So that's some of the stuff. What else they have? I know it takes them, they use about 150 tractor trailers or tractor trailer loads. They don't have 150. They probably do have 150 tractor trailers, but they're not loading them all at once. They
got one guy driving a truck. Glenn, are you awake? Glenn. Several trucks.
Yeah, they do. You know, they load up for whatever stuff they're going to set up that night, and then obviously you know, but it takes about 150 different tractor trailers to do all the resorts. It's about 300,000 yards of ribbon are used across property. That's a lot of, you know, ribbon. The last good number that I got was there's about 8.5 million lights strung throughout Disney. So that's a – yeah, here's a nice thing. All of them are now LED, or I think a good majority. I think some places, because of its theming, I think still use some regular.
Right.
But
they're more cost effective. They don't run on nearly as much electricity. They're brighter. They last longer.
So when we took the tour, they told us that Cinderella Castle, lit every night, uses the same electricity as two household dryers.
Yeah.
That's it.
Those are those big super power wash, not power, I should say power wash and dryers, because you'd be confused. The big LED blast lights that turn colors.
Yeah.
Two or three dryers to run all that. That's incredible.
Yeah.
You know. And then they put on the LED lights for the frozen ice castle thing that they do.
Yeah. Yep.
It's incredible.
Let's see. There's 600 pieces of popcorn are made and hand decorated by Disney artists for different trees and different decorations. There's about 100,000 poinsettias used every year. And the strange thing too is they only leave them out for a couple of weeks. And then they keep changing them out, and I'm not sure why they do that. They do that with a lot of plantings too.
Well, because they just don't last. I mean, you've got people who are
unfortunately trampling them,
or pouring stuff on them, or doing all sorts of stuff to them. So they probably don't last long.
Yeah,
you know,
if you go down Main Street in the Magic Kingdom, they have those poinsettia bowls, and those take typically 30 to 40 poinsettias to make. One of those.
Right.
Let's see. There's about 25,000 poinsettias just in the Magic Kingdom. So I have 100,000, 25. So,
wow.
You know, fourth. Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite number that you've got is it takes two nights and a crew of 30 people to do all of the holiday landscaping at the Magic Kingdom. So they take all of the fall foliage out, pull that out. Yeah. And then they put all the Christmas with the poinsettias and all the Christmas colors in there. That's incredible. Two nights.
Yep. Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. So what is your favorite? Let's start John. What's your favorite park for Christmas?
Magic Kingdom, buddy. Magic Kingdom, hands down. Magic Kingdom. That, you know. I love Epcot. It's nice. Hollywood Studios is a close second, because I love Hollywood Studios and the neon. But I love the soundtrack of the Hollywood Studios better than I like the soundtrack for Magic Kingdom.
Yeah.
But I would say for the holidays, it's definitely Magic Kingdom. So how about we start? Do you have Hollywood? Let's do Hollywood Studios. Because we've talked a lot about Magic Kingdom. So let's talk about some of the facts about Hollywood Studios. Let's talk about the one fact that Hollywood Studios.
Not a lot of.
That was a heck of a shot right there. But we could talk about Osborne Family Lights. Yeah, and
right.
Yeah. So.
Go ahead.
And I'm pulling these numbers from Disney by the Numbers, which you are more than welcome to go to and check out yourself. It's DisneyByTheNumbers.com. And then there's a tab to the left that says Holiday by the Numbers. So in Hollywood Studios, 10 miles of twinkling rope lights are used in the Osborne Family Spectacle of Dancing Lights. And the thing about that is they have replaced all of those lights with LED lights. There's 3.5 million lights were used in the original family display of the Osborne Family Lights. And then now they've had an additional 5 million in the new Spectacle of Dancing Lights display, all are LEDs now. And that was, what, 2 years ago they went all LED?
Yeah, yeah. When it became Siemens, sponsored by Siemens.
Yes. So I guess that was three years ago.
Yeah, it might have been.
Maybe. Those Siemens dudes, yeah. Man, they're everywhere.
Yeah. I like this one, that there's 40 snow machines, and they use 100 gallons of snow fluid each night.
Yeah. And here's what's amazing about that. And coming from the production world,
right?
You don't use, for a regular show, you don't use a ton of snow fluid.
Yeah.
They're going through 100 gallons. I wouldn't go through a gallon for all of Christmas. Well, maybe I might go through a gallon and a half.
Right.
For the shows that I've done. Yeah. It's insane. That's just incredible. And if you haven't been to Osborne Family Lights, they do the dancing light shows are like 7 or 10 minutes. And then they do like a 10 or 15 minute in between where they have Christmas music playing. And it's during those 15 minute periods is when they have snow on all the streets of the Americas. And so, you know, if you're talking, you know, 30 to 45 minutes of snow times, you know, 3 hours, 3-4 hours. I mean, that's a ton of fake snow that's blowing on you. It's incredible.
Yeah. You can actually, you know, if you put your hands out, you can actually can collect some of the snoopy.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't eat it. It's soap. Yeah,
it's soap.
It's not good. Yeah. The flakes.
I'm sure it's non-toxic.
Oh, yeah.
It's just gotta be
totally toxic. The funny thing is the snowflakes, at least the last time I was at the Halloween or the Christmas parade in Magic Kingdom, the flakes were so big, they were covering my glasses, and I was supposed to be shooting it for Travel with Rick. I couldn't see. I'm like, this is crazy. I'm like in a blizzard here.
Yeah.
So what else about the Osborne lights?
All right. So it takes 30 technicians to set up the lights, and they start in August and are not finished, obviously, until, you know, typically the end of Halloween or November 1st. What else? There's a...
Well, you've got 21,000 hours.
Yeah.
10 weeks of setup is why they start in August, are needed to install the 5 million lights at the Osborne Spectacle of Dancing Lights. And this is the last year they're doing it. So...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad we're talking about these numbers now because they're going to be gone in a little bit.
Yeah. They use over a million zip ties to put all the lights in place.
That's a lot of zip ties. And 71 miles of extension cables.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible.
What is this? 800,000 watts of electricity are needed for the Osborne lights. I'm surprised, you know, they must have a generator doing, you know, boosting some of the power. Maybe the park can handle it. You know, I would think, I don't know. I would think it would be an electric draw on the park. You know, all those lights going on at once, going off at once.
Right.
You know, they must have it on a separate circuit.
Yeah.
I got that big light switch.
Yeah, I got that big light switch.
That's what it is. It's a big light switch.
That Goofy is in charge of.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
That's a recipe for trouble.
Yeah.
So that's the Osborne Family Lights. That's at Disney's Hollywood Studios. You want to hit a resort?
Sure.
Let's pick one. Resort. What's your favorite resort?
I like the Contemporary, but there's not a lot of good stuff there, probably. There's some things that we can use.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and talk about the Contemporary Resort, because it's pretty cool. Now, there has been a change this year, and we haven't updated because last year they had a 17-foot gingerbread tree decorated with chocolate ornaments. This year, they almost – I called the one over at the beach resort – beach club. They have a gingerbread hut. And they sell shingles out of it. But this year they have like a frozen – God forbid they do something in the parks that's frozen.
Yeah,
just don't have enough frozen. Right. So they've got the frozen gingerbread structure. So, that's there. And then when they did that, they would use 4,939 shingles to create it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a lot. And I do know this for a fact. When you go to the Grand Floridian and purchase your gingerbread shingle, it's very dry. It's very, very dry cookie-ish. When you go to the Grand Floridian, obviously not Grand Floridian, but the Contemporary Resort, Contemporary. And you buy a shingle, it's a lot softer because it's from two different recipes. So you would think that they would standardize that. And I haven't looked through the list. Do you have a number of how many
Shingles?
Yeah, how many shingles? I would love to know that number.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Like I said, they do have a 70-foot tree, and it's got about 35,000 LED lights on it.
Right.
So that's pretty good. And that Mickey that you were talking about,
right,
was a 25-foot diameter Mickey. So that's pretty good. The one ear,
right? One of the
is 18 feet in diameter.
It's ginormous. It's so big.
I like to hang it out on my front door, maybe.
Yeah, that would be awful.
I wonder what my HOA would say.
Hey, where's Tony's house? Just look for the giant Mickey. Oh,
yeah, that one. That one would be fun. Yeah, it takes 25 pieces make up that wreath. So, yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting stuff.
So
let's talk about the Christmas party, because there's some interesting things there.
Yeah.
I know some of my favorite facts are the amount of hot chocolate and cookies that are consumed for this thing. This thing cracks me up. So for the very Merry Christmas party, each night they go through approximately 300,000 cookies. Now I'm going on Friday. I'm going to try and beat that number.
Yeah, you're going to make it 320,000. He's a cookie machine, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm going to double fist those little puppies. I'll take four, please.
You should just go get a bag, like during the Halloween retreat. Just like, do you have any more cookies in the back? That'd be great. Just great.
Just take the tray and walk away.
I wonder what they do. They can't.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse me.
Oh, they can't. They can't. If you're caught shoplifting, they don't stop you. They can't stop you because it would ruin somebody's guest experience. So just take the tray. No. Trays, just take the tray. They can buy new trays.
Yeah. So after you finish your 300,000 cookies, you can wash it down with 1,200 gallons of hot cocoa are consumed each night.
Wow.
I'm going to slosh out. I had 300,000 cookies and 1,200 gallons.
You're going to swell up to the size of the Christmas tree.
Gosh. What else they got going on there? Oh, so they use a 70-ton crane to put the Christmas tree into place.
Wow.
On Main Street. And we all know that that doesn't go up until after they shoot
the Christmas parade.
That's it.
Christmas parade. Christmas parade.
I will tell you a secret that I learned. You know, I learned this at the Epcot 30th anniversary. I think it was Charles Ridgway that was talking about this, and that's why I want to go see him in March, because he's got some really good stories. So back in the day when they first started shooting the Christmas Day parade, they put one of the cameras up on the second floor of the train station. They wanted to get that great shot down Main Street and Cinderella's castle, you know, framing the whole thing. So they put the camera up there, and the camera guy is going, big pole is in the way. Big flagpole right in the way.
Yeah.
So somebody said, well, let's take it down. And they're like, we can't take it down. It's concreted into the, you know, concrete. You know, it's like permanent. No. We're Imagineers. We'll figure this out. So they figured out a way. They took down the pole, and then they figured out a way that they can take it down and replace it each year. But the first year that they did this, They took it down and they put it in the back. They went to go put it back up. And the problem was, up at the top of the flagpole is an eagle. And they weren't sure which way that eagle was supposed to face. Nobody had taken notice of which direction this eagle was supposed to face. So they were calling up, you know, organizations like the VFW. They were calling up like the Boy Scouts. They were calling up, you know, the American Legions.
Right.
They were kind of, you know, which way should the eagle on the top of the flagpole be facing? So finally, they called the White House. And the White House said that the eagle should be facing towards the White House.
Huh.
So yeah, that's great. So for Florida, where it's sitting, it would be in a north direction.
Nice.
Obviously, the White House is north of Orlando.
Right.
Which is also perfect because it's then facing the castle, because that happens to also be in the north direction.
Right.
So that's how they solve their little flagpole problem. So each year, the flagpole and the tree go down, and then they put the flagpole right back up.
Yep.
I think it's got a pin that now goes through the base. I have to look at the base again. I can't remember how they were doing it. But each year, yeah, when you watch the Christmas Day parade, you'll notice that the flagpole is missing because,
yeah.
I want that beauty show.
Yeah. And so they got boom. I mean, they take the flagpole down anyway. Now they got the boom camera that gets that beautiful shot. It's not tied down.
Yeah, I think they put one now right at the hub of the end of Main Street too.
Right.
To get that closer boom shot.
Yep. Yeah.
So if you like the parade, there's approximately 164 performers in that parade.
Wow.
All getting union pay.
Oh, yeah. Love and life.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I do love the Christmas party. It's one of my favorite things.
Now, is that different from the regular parade? Is that pay scale different for them?
I don't know if the pay scale is. It might be a little bit because it's at night, so it might be a nighttime differential. But it would be pennies on the dollar.
Right. Okay.
I know it's like the night shift gets a dollar more.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
For losing their sleep.
So let's finish up on the Cinderella Castle, because that's the big deal for Christmas.
Yeah.
And it's funny when you look here, you've got them called Dream Lights.
Right.
Frozen. Anyway, so the 200,000 LED lights adorn the castle now, which made their debut in 2007. So 2007 was the year that Cinderella Castle made its transition to LED lights. And that is an incredible thing to behold. And we start seeing that, I guess, around August, September.
Yeah.
Is when all the shots from, you know, Magic Kingdom have a crane in them.
This year, well, maybe it went faster this year because they weren't painting the turrets.
Right.
Last year, it took them like forever because they were painting and putting up lights at the same time. And that crane was like there from like July to,
it was there for a while. Yeah. It ruined a lot of shots.
Yeah. And, you would almost think that Disney should offer people, some kind of photo service that they'll scrub out the crane out of your picture for free. Just bring all your pictures to the camera shop and we'll take all the cranes out for you.
Yeah, absolutely. They should totally do that. And when you look at Cinderella Castle, when it does a sparkle effect, when it goes into the frozen castle, it's over 500 strobes are used to create that effect. That's just, that's astounding number.
Yeah. Somebody get a seizure.
Absolutely. And so for those of you who don't know, they don't just put the lights on the castle. They actually attach the lights to fish netting that they paint the color of the castle so it blends in. So you don't really see it from far away. When you get up close to it, you can totally see it. They use 32,000 square feet of fish netting to hang the LED lights. So they make the drape of fishnetting, put the lights on it, and they put it on the however they're in attaching it, and then they put that on the crane. Crane lifts it up. They attach it to the castle. That's how they do that. That's incredible to see. They only do it at night. I wish they'd do it during the day because I'd love to watch that.
Yeah. And if you look at it up close, all right, first of all, the castle is not a single color.
No, it's not.
The grouting lines are one color. The bricks are a different color. And they're not all the same shades of gray, and they're pretty meticulous on making sure that if that fish netting is going to be in the grout line, that it's specifically that color.
Right.
You know, it's crazy. They must have some kind of like thing that they lay the fish netting and then they know the color scheme, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I would love to know how they paint it. I really would. Because they're not painting it in place. It's pre-planed. Painted and then they have to hang it and make sure that I guess it lines up with its color scheme. Yeah, it's crazy. I would love to know how they do that. I'd love to go back and take that tour again. Maybe we should do that.
We should. And you know, the thing is it's easy for me to be jaded sometimes because it's constant Disney sometimes.
Yeah,
but it really is fascinating when you stop and think about every day. They put on an incredible show. And yeah, there's glitches here and there. And yeah, there's mistakes and stuff.
Yeah.
But for the most part, they do an incredible job of making things like fishnet that's holding lights up. They make that disappear. They make these seamless transitions from land to land just using music. And I've been to other theme parks that don't do that nearly as well.
Right.
So, and, you know, it's really awe-inspiring, as jaded sometimes as I get, to see that. And that's that magic that we all talk about that we sometimes take for granted. I do. I can't speak for you, buddy, but
yeah,
you know,
it's when you think about it, like I say, the first trip in 1976, you think about from a 13th time, the logistics of, you know, how they do this day in and day out.
Right.
Flawlessly, for the most part, you know, the average guest is not going to see anything,
right?
You know, they're just seeing their experience. And for us as pass holders, we go more, so we pick up on these things that are not always correct,
right,
more easily than the average guest or the first time guest
wouldn't see it.
Walk on by, would not see it, doesn't care. They're in their Disney bubble and they're having their Disney experience.
Right.
And then that's it, you know?
Right. Yeah. So that is there anything else that you really just want to hit?
That's about it.
I think that's great. So let me ask you this one question before we call it a day.
Yeah.
You've got the Disney by the Numbers book. I know that you want to do, you know, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, all that kind of thing, resorts, all that good stuff. Is there any thing out there that you wish that you could do next? Like, is Aulani something that you want to go get Disney numbers on Aulani? Is there, you know, I know when Pandora comes out, there'll probably be some numbers there. Is there anything that you've tried to get over the years that you just can't seem to get?
I would love to have park visit statistics.
Yeah. I don't think they're releasing those. Not even to shareholders, are they? They don't release the shareholder information.
It's not in any of the financial statements. Each year they publish a book called the Fact Book. That you could get from the shareholder site,
right?
Along with the financials, and those have, you know, when they say like Magic Kingdom revenue, you have to take that and divide that by like how many park tickets, you know, you can kind of guesstimate, based on the money and how many days and how much you're charging for a park ticket, but you know. That's not even correct because, you know, some people have annual passes. Some people have, multi-day tickets, which lowers the price per day.
Right.
So it's hard to, you know, come up with a good number. But I'd love to see historical data on, you know, from 1971
right
to 2015, what those numbers, you know, were.
Right. Unfortunately, we have the flip side of that. We see the numbers of, we know how much it cost to get into Walt Disney World when it opened. We know how much the ticket books were. Yeah. We know every year that we're going to raise the prices.
Yeah.
So now we're at, what, $105 per day? And I saw a website the other day say, hey, tis the season for Disney to raise their prices at Walt Disney World. So we're all kind of girding our loins for it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So we see those numbers. I think it would be fascinating to know some of those behind the books. You know, this is how many of these we had. This is how many one day, one park, one day park hopper, you know, annual, seasonal, Florida.
It would be interesting too. And I am sure somebody has it. I know somebody like Touring Plans or Len would have numbers on the historical pricing too. You know, from 71 to current, because that's pretty easy. That's public knowledge. You can, you know, if you went every year and you wrote it down, and I used to have some of those numbers, but it just became very hard to keep up with them because what number do you keep track of? The pass, the multi-day, the annual pass, you know, I said, listen, I can't keep up with, you know, the evolution of, you know, the different ticket media too. So I kind of banned that because I think it drives people crazy. You know, that line is like this, you know, that's a pretty steep.
Right. Going up,
you know, attendance. I don't know. I've heard there've been good years and bad years. So,
right.
You know, I'd like to see that, you know.
Right. That would be fascinating.
And it would be interesting, you know, if you had a marker to say, all right, well, attendance was high and we raised the price this much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, attendance was low because we didn't raise the price. You know, the price to visit guest ratio would be interesting, you know.
Yeah, it's got to be a tricky dance between supply and demand. And then, you know, once they broke that $100 barrier, that was huge. That had grave implications.
Yeah.
So it'll be fascinating to see what happens over the next few years.
I'm going
to
tell you which park it'll be next.
Epcot.
You think?
Oh, yeah. No. Epcot's way more popular than Animal Kingdom. You think it's going to be Animal Kingdom?
I think somebody's going to pay for Pandora.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
We got $20
million. It's $95 now. It's only $5 more, John. And then you're at $100.
I think they're going to raise those prices across the board. I think it's going to be $100 a day for.
No, but I think the next park that'll be, you know, like the differential, like Magic Kingdom's $105 to everything else. I think it'll be Animal Kingdom. I'll say this: when Pandora opens, they will be the differential park.
Oh,
they will be number two, unless Hollywood Studios beats them with Star Wars and Toy Story Land, then they will be the next one.
Here's why I disagree with you, and I hope that we're both wrong and they don't raise the prices like that. 90 days of Flower and Wine and Flower and Garden. We're already at 53. I'll bet they'll bump it up to 60 days of Food and Wine.
They don't have to raise the ticket prices because they get everybody to spend the extra money on the food and the wine.
Yeah, but they're not paying all the extra money for some of the other things that they do there. I mean, you have to pay for the chef things. You have to pay for the special drinking and dining events. Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree, but they have to have more people manning the guns for the food stations. Mm-hmm. And people like Epcot. People like to go to Epcot and drink. So I think that what's going to happen is they're going to raise the prices, you know. Mm-hmm. Epcot will be Epcot. I think Epcot will be the one to go next.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they're going to raise the prices again. So, you know, Magic Kingdom will be $110, and I think the other parks will be, you know, $100 easy.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
All right.
We'd love to know what you guys think. You can always email us at DisneyParksPodcast@gmail.com. You can leave us a voicemail at DisneyParksPodcast.com and click on the little icon that says hotline. And if you put something there and we think it's really fascinating, we would even bring it on the show. And Find us over on Facebook and the Twitter. Facebook is Disney Parks Podcast and Twitter is Disney Podcaster. You can find us over there and make sure you come to our website and hook up with some of our great sponsors. And, you know, Tony, thank you for taking the time to tell a little bit of your story and share about the book. And
hope that everybody has a nice, happy, safe holiday. And
yeah,
maybe Santa will bring you something nice.
Yeah, we have a couple more shows.
Yeah.
We have one more Christmas show, I think. And then we have something very cool that we're doing for the last show of the year. It's going to be a 2016 year in preview. We're going to talk about all the things that we know are coming and all the things that we hope are coming. And that'll be fun. A little different spin on the end of the year show for most places. So that'd be cool. So that'd be awesome. So thanks for listening. And guys, Tony, thank you for doing what you do. And there's nothing left to say, Tony, but
see you in the parks.
The Disney Parks Podcast is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company. All Disney parks, attractions, lands, shows, event names, etc. are registered trademarks of the Walt Disney Company.
Like a boat out of the blue, fate steps in and sees.